Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by Alexandra Kasouf.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Doing well. We just got back from Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Took a little trip.
Yeah. We drank some switchel.
What is that?
Switchel. Well, because we were just talking about ginger. Right before we started, we were doing a little leveling and talking about food stuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about ginger, but switchel is amazing.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it before we went to Minneapolis, and apparently it's actually from more close to where I'm from. Switchel is like a ginger-based drink. It's like really, it's like a punch of ginger.
It's like a brew.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. It is, and it's a little bit of vinegar. And a little bit of something sweet. And in Minneapolis, if you go to health stores, you can get it for like $4 a jar, and it comes like a jar. And so I got one because I wanted to try it.
The first one you got was like a lavender lemonade switchel.
Mm-hmm.
Not lemonade,
because there's no, well, I guess there's a little lemon in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
But it was like not, it wasn't sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was like aromatic.
Yeah.
More than anything. It works your gut.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those switchel burps are not to be toyed with.
No, not at all.
Uh-uh.
Cool.
Cool.
So, Al, we have you on today because you actually just recently moved to Chicago, right?
I did, yeah. I've only been here since September.
Yeah. So what is that now? 5 months or so?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
I still feel like there's so much of the city that I have to explore, and I don't know what's what or...
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right.
I moved here August of 2015, and I still feel like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Less so, though. It's getting better, but...
I moved here 3 years ago, and I've found now that... That was like that for the first 2 years, and now I just kind of like... stay in my neighborhood. I don't really go into the loop if I can help it.
Oh, God, no. I do not. I avoid the loop at all costs.
Yeah, and I work in Hyde Park, but besides that, just kind of a weird Andersonville to Hyde Park, and then never in the loop.
So can I tell a story about one experience that I had in the loop? So I don't go down there very often just because I don't have reason to, but I was there for an audition when I had first moved here. And it went really poorly, and I was on the phone with a friend, and I was upset, and I was telling... It was Devere, actually. I was on the phone with Devere, telling him all about it. And as soon as I hung up the phone, a bird crapped on my face. On my face. Right next to my eye. Like, dripping down right next to my eye. And I thought, this is a good thing. Because I can laugh at this. I can laugh at myself. And the audition doesn't matter. You know, it was like a really grounding experience.
Because a bird just shit on my face, and what else matters?
It was absurd, and what else matters? And that was this distinct memory I have of, I just moved to Chicago, and I'm in the loop.
Yeah.
So, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's a pretty good warning of what the loop is like.
You're going to be sad, and a bird is going to shit on your face.
Yep, a lot of gray. Actually, so that's really funny because we have you on to talk about what you're doing in Chicago, but it's funny because right now I'm in the middle, literally, I stopped doing this to do this interview. I'm working on this article on, it started out kind of trying to explore what it's like to be 20-something and an artist and being a specialist in a field. And I'm using classical singing as a lens for that. But what it's really... what a big aspect of it is too, is what people that I ended up picking also either moved to Chicago or moved out of Chicago or something like that. So it's interesting how that also is a huge part of this field. And I think there's something to be said potentially about specializing in general, specializing in a field and needing to move for that field for whatever reason. Maybe it ends up being a cross section of your interests or I don't know. I think that's interesting that you're on now at the same time. So I guess my question, hopefully this leads somewhere interesting, hopefully. So what specifically brought you here to Chicago?
Sure. So I'm here to do my training in the Alexander Technique.
Mm-hmm.
And there are programs in various larger cities throughout the U.S., but I chose this one specifically because just by chance, all of the trainees on the course have a background in the arts.
Cool.
And it's not meant to be that way. The program isn't designed specifically for artists, but we just all happen to be. And I thought, that's a really neat environment to be in. I want to do that. So it was a big risk for me. I didn't really have that much experience in Chicago. I moved here from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So, you know, still within the Midwest and not necessarily my goal to stay in the Midwest. But No, go ahead.
How long did you live in Cincinnati for?
About 6 years.
Okay.
With a little brief travel time of thinking that I was going to be leaving Cincinnati and traveling around, not really having a home base, and looking for work everywhere else and continuing to get work in Cincinnati. So yeah. I ended up going back there. And so with that little break, 6 years. So it was a big change moving here. This is definitely a more interesting city.
How did comparing to moving to Cincinnati compare to moving to Chicago?
It had the same level of not knowing what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
Because when I moved to Cincinnati, I was going there for school. Mm-hmm. I went there for my master's, so I had direction. I wasn't just picking up and going, but it was the furthest I'd ever lived from home.
Cincinnati?
Yeah. At the time, my folks were living just north of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And so it was, that was a sort of a big step into adulthood, or so I thought, you know, faking being an adult like we all are.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A
lot. Yeah. And I think in a way I'm having that same experience here, that I left something that was familiar, but I had a direction and I was ready to go.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like having done the Cincinnati experience and having it go from a future thing to a past tense thing, do you think that prepared you for moving to Chicago?
I don't know. I wasn't really attached to staying in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So I was prepared to go anywhere, really.
Cool. Cool. All right, well, let's talk more about what brought you here. I really am always interested in Alexander Technique. I randomly picked up one tidbit from a friend who took a weird workshop once.
Great. They're always weird.
They're great. But yeah. They're great, though. And it's, tell me if this is true or not, or if I've been doing this every day as a weird thing that doesn't actually do anything, like a weird placebo.
I'm ready.
I picked up that if you, in like the middle of the day, if you lay on your back for 20 minutes,
yes,
it like inflates the spine.
Yes.
And it's key. Remember that it's key for it to be at least 15 minutes or something like that. Does that sound right?
15 minutes would be ideal, but not everybody has that, and not everybody can stay in one position for that amount of time.
Right.
So really, any
like
amount
me.
Of time.
Yeah. Daniel's been trying to get me to do this for weeks, and I will lay down for a minute and be like, "Whoo!
I have
I'm
some
bored.
Tips for you."
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I can absolutely give you some tips.
Awesome.
About how to make that more enjoyable for yourself. But it's not so much about the time, it's about doing it intentionally.
Yeah.
It's called constructive rest. I don't know if you were introduced
to
that term, but it's called constructive rest. And there are other positions you can do it in other than lying on your back, but that's a good one. And the foundation of that practice is allowing your spine to be along the floor rather than vertical, because, you know, we have discs between the vertebrae and they're compressed a little bit by gravity acting on your spine. Mm-hmm. And when you lie on the floor, you allow for a little bit more space and a rejuvenation of the fluid actually in between.
Well, it's
so
like
it's so good for you.
It's like that Louis episode where he goes to the doctor and it's like a weird, not that, anyway, sorry, the doctor is like a weird, he's like a master's, it's like a specialist or something like that. Mm-hmm. Basically, where if you want to talk about the theory of medicine, you go to this doctor. And he goes to the doctor and he's like, "My back's fucked up." And the doctor's like, "Well, yeah, I mean, you're 45 and like the human spine wasn't meant to be on 2 feet." And he's like, and Louis's like, "That doesn't help me." Like, I'm like, "What can I do today?" And he's like, Well, I mean, humanity, like, evolved from being on four legs too quickly, and so, like, all of us have back problems because we're not... It was just... Anyway, so that was really interesting to me. But yeah, I do remember constructive rest, mm-hmm. and I didn't remember it until you said that, which is funny to me.
Yeah. So, with this program, tell us a little bit more about it. Like, is it... Like, what's the... I guess what I'm interested in is, like, small scale and large scale. Like, what is the day-to-day? Mm-hmm. And then also, how long are you involved?
Okay. Can I start with how long I'm involved?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes more sense. So I'm training to be a teacher of the Alexander Technique. So that means that I have to complete 1,600 hours of coursework over 3 years minimum. So if it takes you a little bit longer, that's fine, but you have to be in the training for at least 3 years because it's such an experiential kind of learning. Mm-hmm. So much of what Alexander teachers do is hands-on work. And so learning how to actually do that hands-on work takes a lot of patience, and you go through a lot of frustration and all of that. So that time spent in it really is important. And day to day, I am in class for, I think it's 4 hours a day, roughly, 4 days a week, early mornings. So I have the rest of my day to think about all the very frustrating things that I do in class. But it's from 8 a.m. to 11:30, 11:45-ish in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that like Monday through Thursday?
Monday through Thursday.
Wow.
It's great. It really is, because... it's gotten me into the habit of getting up and moving early in the morning. And I feel like that's a good habit for me to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, I said the word habit. That's going to have to come back. That's a term that we use a lot.
Go for it.
Wow. Alexander Technique.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the basis of what the technique is a way to free yourself from your habits.
Okay.
And I know, and the look on your face says... at all. That's such a frustrating thing to even think about. But the word habit doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, you know? So there are good habits, like what I was describing of getting up and getting moving. But there are also a lot of things that we do habitually rather than consciously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this process of learning what your habits are, and are they necessary? And could you do things more efficiently if you didn't do those habits?
I remember we talked in like October, and you had been in the program for like a month, and I was asking you how it was going, and you were like, I just feel so frustrated in my body because you basically you had gotten to the point where you had identified the things you were doing on a regular basis that were wrong, but you had not yet stopped doing them.
Yes, that is my everyday. I still know nothing.
Oh, God.
But it's okay, because actually, this is something that has helped me tremendously. It's transferred into how I treat myself as an artist, that I can trust that I'm in the process and trust that I'm going in the right direction, and I don't have to have the result I'm looking for right away. I just have to keep giving myself the right directions. And that is so important for us to remind ourselves as artists, you know, that you can have something that you're working on and that you're working toward, but where you are is not crap. It still has value.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that little nugget.
Was that around the same time as Oscar Jar to the Face?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We have two cats. One I've had for a while. I've had Oscar for 3 years, maybe. Yeah. The other, Moody.
We got in July.
Yes, 6 months.
Yeah.
Oscar is a pain in the ass. Giant pain in the ass. We had a jar.
This is an uncomfortable story.
That's okay. I'm here for it. We had a jar on the windowsill
in our bedroom. And at 4 a.m, I woke up to the sound of that jar being nudged across the windowsill.
Which is amazing. That's a key to how, a key. That's a thing of how in tune we are to Oscar as a cat, because anytime we hear something nudging, it's such a slight sound, but it's like a pin needle dropping in a quiet room.
Yeah.
What is going on?
So I woke up to, and I look up, and a jar, a mason jar, a huge mason jar, which
big one.
A big mason jar hits me square in the face.
Oh my God.
And the sound woke Daniel up. He said that it sounded like the jar hit the floor, but it hit my face. And I had this horrible black eye. And when I... And this is just a testament to how wonderful a person you are. You saw me with a black eye. You pulled me aside. And you were like, is everything okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm great. And you were like, no, is everything okay? And I was like... Oh, Jesus, yes, no, everything's fine. Oh, my God, no, genuinely. And I told her the story, and she was like, okay.
And also, good for you.
Yeah.
Also, genuinely good for you.
No offense, I didn't know.
No. Trust me, totally fine. No worries.
No, I told him that story, and he was like, good for her. Yeah. That was really good of her. Yeah.
No, because, you know, I'm a big old feminist, and I genuinely believe that men, it's very possible that men can be terrible. Not all men.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Cool. Yeah. No, that was really funny. We got it. We also had a good laugh about it afterwards.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because, yeah, I was doing a, I occasionally do recordings for people for auditions and stuff like that. And so we had actually just met. I was doing audition recordings for you and a couple other people with Bethany Brodigam, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
how do you know Bethany?
We were roommates at Opera Works a zillion years ago.
Cool.
Yeah. It was so funny. I was the last to arrive for that program because I had a hell of a day of travel. My flight kept getting delayed or canceled, or I missed a connection. I think I ended up taking 4 flights to get there. I got there super late. I go to the room, and she runs at me. I've never seen this person before in my life. She runs at me. She gives me a huge hug. She says, "Hi, I'm Bethany. I'm an ENFP." And I'm like... Okay, sure, you are. I see that.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, she's great. Well, she's a trip. Because I've now recorded her 5 or 6 times. She needs recordings for different things.
Well,
she's really good about setting stuff up.
She does the work. She hustles.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked to, we had, do you know Emily Cox?
Nope.
She's a soprano in the area. She does... is Bethany saying Beachbody?
Yeah.
Is that what she does?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She is another Beachbody person. Mm-hmm. That's unrelated to what we talked about. But, we were just talking about the hustle.
Yeah.
And, that's, Bethany's another person who's got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she, and it's cool. I don't know. Like, as a person who lives with someone who records a lot, I know I've learned the importance of recording yourself mm-hmm. frequently and kind of keeping tabs on,
well, yeah,
on your progress.
I think I've been working and recording on and off for different things for a while, and I think there's something to be said about getting to get different snapshots of yourself because your voice changes, obviously. But the thing that's amazing is if you are doing recordings frequently enough for 2 or 3 years in a row, what you recognize is that things that feel like they're like these giant breakthroughs and it's like, oh, my voice will never be the same, end up just kind of, I mean, of course, there are people that need to go through giant fixes and stuff like that, but it ends up more often than not being kind of like waves going in different directions mm-hmm. where, you know, 1 year maybe you have a recording of an art song that you were doing, a certain way, and that may be good on one level, whereas a year later you may be doing something completely different, maybe even something that's not good for your voice technique or your health or something, but it may have an aspect to it that is good, that specific recording. And I mean, any recording on a given day is not a pure representation of who you are as an artist for that day, for that week, for that year.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. And, you know, getting to see people like Bethany or, you know, after a while I was recording myself a ton, and kind of getting different snapshots of, of what it's like as an artist to do that, I think is really valuable. Because you kind of learn what works, you learn what doesn't. And you could be doing something completely wrong, but find one good thing in it.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
I think that's kind of... So, before we started recording, I asked you, like, how is Alexander going? And speaking of, like, where you are right now, you would you had specifically said, like, I realize it is such the place that I needed to be.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Like, I want to know more about that. Like what makes it, you know... What, because that's such a rare feeling to be like, I am in the right place, I'm doing the right thing. So like, what led you to that conclusion?
Quite a few things. But a big one is that so much of the training is taking a really honest look at yourself. And I'm in a place where that feels like something I'm ready to do. It's a really hard thing, I think, to ask anybody to do that, to really honestly look at themselves and say, you know, what are the things that I'm doing that I don't need to be doing, you know? And I mean, in terms of aspects of your identity or activities that you have or, you know, your bad habits, whatever it is. And I know that sounds like a horrible thing and why would anybody want to do that? But I feel like I'm in the place where that's the right thing for me right now.
Yeah.
Sounds really cleansing.
It is. And not in like a hippy dippy way, but in like an I'm learning to be a more efficient me kind of a way.
Yeah. Well, even if you look at it completely, it's pragmatically the way I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Like if you look at it from a completely practical sense, it makes sense because, you're trying to find, like, details always have something to be said about the general principle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's always, like a detail of something is always indicative of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Generally. And, you know, that's what I think, like, new agey, whatever you want, however you want to call it, like, organic thought, does well is kind of, like, thinking about things in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to ask you about, too, was, what does most of the thought, the teachings and thinkings of, Alexander Technique, is it mostly kind of, like, physical posturing things, or is there a lot of it that's kind of theoretical, like, philosophical, like, where do you...
All of the above?
Yeah?
Cool. Yeah. So, there is a lot of physical work, but it comes from the underlying philosophical principles.
Interesting.
Of making a choice to do something instead of doing something habitually.
Yeah.
So, in terms of, you know, the way that I'm sitting right now is a choice. It's not a great alignment for me, but I'm choosing it. I'm having a good slump.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you gotta just do that. But the important thing is I recognize that. I'm not just doing it, you know, because I don't know any better. I can identify what's going on with my body right now and say, this is okay for me to temporarily be like this.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't know that that's something that I'm doing, and I keep doing it over and over and over again, and then a problem arises, I didn't do the work. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't do the necessary work. Does that make sense? Did I just talk in a circle?
No, I think that it's praising self-awareness.
Yeah.
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 No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I also don't mean to, like, overgeneralize what you said either.
No, it's such a hard thing to verbalize, really. It's such an experiential learning. It's different for every individual who does it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience that I'm having as a trainee is different than if either of you were to go and have some Alexander lessons. It would be a more surface-level experience of it, because you're not doing it 4 days a week for 4 hours a day. It would be a 45-minute to an hour lesson.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that you could repeat, and you could, you know, take the ideas of it and go about your day, and it does sort of trickle down into all of your other activities. You can't help thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of where the philosophical part of it comes in.
Sure.
Is that, you know, once you know what it's about, it just keeps coming back.
Yeah.
And you can apply it to anything.
Do you notice it in other people?
What do you mean? Like in people that I observe or people in my class?
In people you observe.
Generally, no. I'm not going around judging people's posture. Right. It's not that. I mean, I can maybe identify some things that people could do differently, but that's not for me to decide, right. You know?
Right.
It's about making the choices for yourself. Unless, you know, I have close friends or family members who are really just getting themselves in knots. Mm-hmm. And I think, gosh, you really could benefit from this.
Yeah.
I maybe need to find a way to say that that is not so judgy.
It's kind of a, you know? Like there's something in your teeth situation.
Yes. How do you say it?
Yeah, right. Oh, I forgot what I was going to say again.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So, as far as with Alexander Technique and you, mm-hmm. What do you want to... I'm trying to think of the right way to word this. My initial, like, temptation is to ask you, what do you want in your life with it? Like, mm-hmm. what is your hope? Like, what do you want to be doing in 5 years? And mm-hmm. how does Alexander Technique play a role?
Well, part of the reason that I decided to do the certification in the first place is because in my training as a singer, I think there is a lack of teaching about the body as a coordinated whole. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of focus on how does the vocal mechanism work, but that's not all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I want to approach performing, not just for singers, but I want to approach performing from a perspective of the whole body as the instrument. And I want to be able to work with other singers and maybe other, you know, actors or dancers or something on using themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to do that for myself as well in my own performing. And that's definitely something that I think is starting to happen the more and more that I learn about the technique. But I'd really like to be someone who can offer that kind of insight.
Yeah.
For people.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Because I don't know if you know this, but I also do modern dance and
cool.
sort of performance art type things.
Very cool.
So that's something that's always been nagging at me. Like, you need to do more of this. This actually does go with classical music and opera.
Right.
But how?
Right.
You know? So yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that you shared something on your Facebook recently about how you both sang and danced a role.
I did.
And it is incredibly unusual that it was done like this. What was that role? What was that opera?
That was actually Siegfried. There's a role in there, the Woodland Bird,
okay.
that is for a lighter voice soprano. It's not a huge Wagnerian thing.
Right.
So it was totally appropriate for me to do, but I'm pretty sure they only cast me because I dance, and they wanted somebody to dance the role of this woodland bird. And so I choreographed some really, you know, character bird movements
yeah.
with all these head twitches and things. And I danced and I sang and I had a blast.
Cool.
And I've done some other things that were kind of zany and kind of out there like that. I did a performance with Contemporary Dance Theater in Cincinnati last season that they actually wrote for me, that a local Cincinnati composer wrote for me to sing and also dance in the piece.
Cool.
Yeah. It was wild.
Do you, have you, and where was the Siegfried?
That was also in Cincinnati.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to do, like, performance art stuff in Chicago?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I, the closest thing I've ever done to performance art, and we talked about this with, Emma, is, have you ever heard of Nonop?
No.
Nonop is a, company that is kind of an outlet for this composer named Christopher Pressing,
mm-hmm.
who is a percussionist slash composer, opera composer, and he wrote this giant kind of soundscapey opera called Thunder Perfect Mind, and he needed choir people for it, and so I've kind of been on and off working with them, and they do different workshops of it. They take different pieces of the entire opera, which is, I think, like a 3-hour long thing, and they've done kind of like hour long installations of different parts of it, and there's a lot of different moving pieces to it. Like one of them that I did the first time I ever did it, he did specifically this part of it where they took a piano and they took the lid off and they took all the strings and strung them across the studio space.
Oh my gosh.
And there were people with like gloves on and stuff, and they were able to play the piano strings, and it was part of the score that different strings ended up being pitched to different notes and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
So that was really cool. And then they also had two violinists and a cellist up on chairs. Like, it was probably like a 20-foot high space.
Oh my gosh.
And so they had chairs kind of like nailed into the support beams, and they had the players up there playing. So that was actually really cool. We all just got distracted because our cat Moody is currently sniffing a guitar that we have. What a cat. What a cat. Anyway, so but that was really cool because it was more movement based, mm-hmm. which I don't get to do enough of. And it was cool there was really no singing, it was mostly speech. And that was just a really, I think there's really something cool about performance art
mm-hmm.
that most classical singers don't get a chance to do. And it mm-hmm. it really informs your thinking as a performer, because you realize that like movement has so much to do with when you make a choice, like how that ends up being read by the audience, like mm-hmm. what you're trying to say, how you move has so much of a thing to do with that.
Yeah. Also, it's great to just learn how to move like a human when you're singing.
yeah. No, I think that that was like why Callas was such a big deal, was because it was like she started doing these roles and actually acted them like
uh-huh.
humans do,
uh-huh.
which like, why would you do that? No, not why would it be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are there things that you've brought to your singing from having so much movement experience? Like,
You know, not successfully until recently.
Okay.
I think there was a long time that I was holding on to this idea that they had to be separate things.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what I was told for a long time.
In what way?
Well, for starters, I was double majoring two separate performance degrees in my undergrad, and my voice teacher told me that I had to choose because it's absurd to think that I could have a performance career in two disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know. It was just an idea that I had had for a long time, that they didn't go together and that they couldn't go together,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even that dancing was hurting my singing, which really now I realize was definitely not the case.
Sounds like jealous voice teachers.
No.
Sorry,
I'm
definitely not. I have no idea who your past voice teachers are. I'm not in any way. But like, I just personally feel like I know someone that was a dancer at one point, and like their teacher was like, oh, well, the way you use your abs for dancing is clearly horrible for your breath support. Like,
which is probably true, but being able to have the control of your body to make a choice about when you use your abs that way and when you don't
mm-hmm.
is boom, Alexander technique.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like you're in a spot where you can finally bridge that gap.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Definitely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I know one of the other things we wanted to talk about was vegetarianism.
Yeah.
Because, so Daniel and I, for those listening who don't know about Daniel and myself, we're both vegan. And Al over here is a vegetarian, former vegan?
Former vegan. Yeah.
Former vegan, current vegetarian of about 15 years.
I think 14 or 15 years.
Well, that was the main reason why we went on a trip to Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we were vegan. It wasn't like some weird mecca thing to go to Minneapolis.
I mean, it kind of ended up being that way.
Well, we went to this place. I told you a little bit about it already, but the herbivorous butcher.
Yeah.
Shout out to them, because
thank you.
Just thank you. It's this place they do like seitan and not Satan, but like...
So seitan is a fake meat.
Yeah.
It's like a meat substitute that you can make out of vital wheat gluten.
Mm-hmm.
And the protein structure mimics meat.
Yeah.
So texturally it's very similar. It also has similar protein content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it tastes like nothing, so you can season it however you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
But this place does fake meats and cheeses, and that's kind of their specialty. And
cheese,
you hear that and you go like, that sounds horrible.
Yeah.
But they, basically, their reputation... Because this is the thing that's funny to me about veganism, is I feel like a lot of vegans know the food. Like, the food that's specifically trying to mimic meats is bad. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's, like, an undercurrent of, like we get it. Like, yeah. Like, you don't have to tell me again about how you, like, could never give up meat. Like, I get it. Like, there's a whole thing to it.
Yeah.
But this place has kind of an infamous reputation of actually being good. Which is a funny thing.
Like, no, like, we know it's usually bad, but this place is good.
Yeah, right. It's always fun to me to find places like that. Like, Kitchen 17.
Oh, I don't know.
Have you been there?
No.
Oh, okay, so it's in Lakeview. They're moving to a different space, but they have, like, Zagat-rated burgers.
Oh.
Like, a lot, like, rated next to meat burgers.
Cool.
I think their burgers are like a seitan blend of some kind, and
just that they amazing. Make.
And they do a deep dish pizza that's really good too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cool. This is a dangerous game because like I could really go off about pizza for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from New York, for people that didn't know, and mm-hmm. I care a lot more than people should.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So maybe I shouldn't tell you this then, but I don't like pizza. I don't get it.
Well, have you had like New York pizza?
Maybe not in a long time, because I haven't been to New York in a long time.
Yeah. Because I'm from Long Island, so, like, this is, I think, the biggest thing about pizza, if you want it, like, when you get into the, like, pizza debate, is I think it really has a lot to do with what you grew up on.
Uh-huh.
It has so much to do with, like, childhood memories and stuff. And so, like, I specifically remember, like, being 10, going bowling, and, like, finishing up, and, like, my dad taking me to Branch and Ellie's on Long Island, and, getting a slice of pizza and an Italian ice. And, you know, the thin crust, like, flavorful, good Italian sauce and a good cheese is just, it takes me right back to that.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think that food especially has a lot to do with that,
mm-hmm.
That kind of idea of, like...
Did you grow up in Milwaukee?
I forgot. No, I did grow up in upstate New York.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Because I knew that at one point... So, a little bit of background. The way I know Al is that when I graduated from college, I moved back to Milwaukee and got involved in this group called Calliope Vocal Arts, run by our friend Devere, mm-hmm. who Al mentioned earlier as mm-hmm. being the on the other end of the phone when a bird shit on her face.
Yeah.
And it was this wonderful little group... where they put on a couple concerts a year, and Al and I were in a scenes program together.
Mm-hmm.
It was the spinning wheel scene from Rape of Lucretia.
Mm-hmm.
You were Lucia.
I actually don't remember.
I think you were Lucia.
I don't even remember.
And I was the narrator. And yeah, a lot of my most distinct memory of Calliope was is Sweaty Churches.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Sweaty Churches. Yeah. Takes me
very
right back.
Very artistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but we had talked at some point along, you know, about kind of like, you're in Milwaukee, but where are you from? And, yeah, I seem to remember that although you went to school in Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
and you spent some amount of time before that in Milwaukee?
After,
okay.
Yeah, I took some time before I... went to do my master's in Cincinnati. So after I finished my degree, I floated aimlessly around Milwaukee for a couple of years.
As you do.
Yeah.
It's a fun place to do that, though.
I love Milwaukee. Oh, I think great. Milwaukee is great.
Yeah. No, yeah. I definitely didn't mean that.
It's an amazing place to float around aimlessly, because I, too, floated aimlessly around Milwaukee.
Like, I love River West.
Oh, yeah. That's where I lived.
Really?
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Have you ever been to, like, River West Co-op?
Yeah.
I mean, how could you live in River West and not go to River West Co-op?
I don't know.
That's a ridiculous question.
Yeah, I lived like 2 blocks from Art Bar.
Okay.
Art Bar? Yeah.
Cool.
It's a crappy little art gallery with mystery beer was my favorite thing.
Mm.
They would serve a $2 beer in a paper bag, and if you could guess what it was free.
That's a Milwaukee thing. There are a couple bars. It'll be like $2 mystery beer Tuesdays or something.
Well, that's what I love.
You could guess what I was wearing. They were always terrible. It was like Lone Star. And, it was not good beer.
Well, that's one of the things that I love about Milwaukee is just the I want to say the industrialism, but like that's not really the word for it. The like
the work ethic,
but also the I will build whatever the fuck I want to build.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then it will be successful.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, there are so many things where they've taken a old warehouse and bought it and turned it into a coffee roaster,
yeah,
or you know, a craft brewery or a vegan restaurant, grocery store. You know,
yeah. Like, well, and like there are so many, like the Milwaukee trope is like, you know, you take a house and you turn it into a bar.
Yeah.
Where it's like you use what you have and you build it with your bare hands.
Right.
And it's like, that's what I love about it. And we were talking about this and kind of like comparing it to Minneapolis, where Minneapolis, you kind of get the impression that it's like a lot of really smart people making things with hemp.
Preface. Yeah. Preface, that's an opinion of two people that spent 2 days in Minneapolis.
Not even.
Yeah.
One day.
Yeah. Like, very unnuanced opinion, but very convinced
yeah.
that it's just that. No, but it seems really cool. Like, there were a lot of parts of it. Yeah.
No doubt. Very cool place, it seems.
Yeah.
But... like, as compared, I guess the truer comparison that I would draw would be between Milwaukee and Madison.
I haven't really spent a lot of time in Madison.
I don't really like Madison, which is kind of, I think, is an unpopular opinion.
Well,
but
I'm kind of with you. I just said that I haven't spent that much time there,
yeah.
But I did a gig there last spring, and the gig was great, but there didn't seem to be that much to see.
What was the gig?
Yeah.
I did a show with Fresco Opera Theater.
Okay.
They wrote a show about the love triangle between the Schumanns and Brahms, and I got to be Clara Schumann.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was actually based on a novel that was written by an author who lives here in Chicago, who is not a musician or a music historian. He just found the subject matter that compelling.
Yeah.
And he wrote a fabulous biography.
Cool.
About the three of them. It's called Trio.
Interesting.
Cool. And the author is Bowman Desai.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really sweet man. He came to see the performance and work with us a little bit.
So do you know how much of Schumann's music was actually written by Clara Schumann?
I mean, I can't give you any kind of percentage.
Yeah. Right, right.
But
no, of course not.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm not leading anything with this.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I like the idea of imagining Schumann as like some schizophrenic, crazy person
yeah.
that actually wasn't that genius. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he was brilliant. I'm not sitting here. I'm sure some Schumann person is like, if they heard that, they'd be like,
outraged.
I'm gonna murder that man.
Because I'm sure that the leading Schumann scholar is listening to this podcast, right?
Maybe. But were there things from that that were really educational? Like, did you learn a lot about, like, what was some of the things that, like, really stood out from that dynamic of the three of them?
Well, it was clear to me that there was a lot of love between the three of them, and it was one of those really complicated things that we think of only existing in modern relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that was a very real thing for the three of them, that, you know, she loved both Brahms and Schumann, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, she made her choices.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of material in the novel that was taken from their letters. And so that was very educational to actually read their letters and the way that they wrote to each other.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's something we've lost.
Letters.
Letter mm-hmm. writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Epistolary skills.
Okay, fancy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, on Madison, I just feel like it just seems like an extension of, like, the entirety of Madison seems like an extension of the college.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe I got.
Yeah, which, I mean, has its, you know, like, some of the best towns are college towns.
Yeah, I feel like with that, the impression that I've gotten based on people who have lived there, currently live there, went to school there, the impression I get is that you either love it or you get out of there. Like, there's really no, like, no one's like lukewarm about Madison.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they either love it and stay there and like really lean into the Madison vibe, or it's like, it was a time in my life and now I'm someplace else and I got an amazing education and now I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know.
But it seems like there's a lot of... That's where the Wisconsin Women's March segment was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people there, wasn't there? Like, because your mom went.
My mom did go.
Oh, cool, yeah. Mama.
Yeah. Awesome. Shout out Aileen Smith.
Progressive mama. Boop, 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 boop.
Well, there's like 75,000 people.
Yeah.
And the Capitol building's really pretty in Madison, too.
Yeah. It was under construction while I was there. Oh. There was scaffolding up all around it.
And you can, like, go and moon Scott Walker if you want to. And get immediately kicked out by the many security guards that are, like, ready for it.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's, like, a preface to getting a job there, is, like, keep an eye out for people that hate Scott Walker.
I don't know.
Anyway, sorry. Cool. What do you have anything upcoming in Chicago?
Nope.
Well, what is what's the name of your program? The Alexander program.
Oh yeah, so I'm doing my training at the Attic.
Okay.
It's Alexander Technique Training in Chicago.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is an excellent acronym.
Isn't it great? It's doubly great because there's a concept that we consider sort of the workings of the mind to be the attic that we talk about sometimes in the technique. So
cool.
It's doubly great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long has Alexander Technique existed?
Well, okay, so... F.M. Alexander was an actor who developed this method of learning when he realized that he was losing his voice when he would go to perform. Mm-hmm. So he was fine through all of his rehearsals, and then he would go to perform and he was losing his voice. And he was doing this shortly after the Second Industrial Revolution, so like roughly right before the turn of the 20th century. And so he spent years watching himself in the mirror, trying to figure out what was happening, and realized all these things about his habitual movement and how we experience our own movement and how different that is from what reality really is. And I don't know that he really intended to share it with anyone else, but it was this fascinating thing because he was successful in alleviating his voice loss. And so people wanted to learn from him about it, and it's always been something that's been taught and passed down.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a lot about it, but his writing is really dense and really hard to actually understand unless you have somebody to guide you through it. So it's always been something that has been taught in a hands-on way.
Cool.
Since that time.
Well, that makes sense to me because I feel like just because you're a genius doesn't mean you're a good writer.
Right. Yes. And like, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's just you have to sift through it.
Yeah.
And it's so repetitive, too. Yeah. He keeps saying the same things. And, you know, even if he says it 8 times, you maybe don't understand what it is that he's getting at.
It's like, I don't know how much, if you're a big reader or not, but if you read, like, Infinite Jest.
Mm-mm.
It's basically just like 800, 900 pages of people being neurotic.
Oh.
Like,
that
which is
awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. And I think, I mean, I've probably read like 150 pages of it and had to stop because basically the last 100 pages of it is all footnote citations.
Oh my God.
Not even 100, maybe 200. And it's a novel. It's not like a, it's not, nonfiction. So, like, there's a story, and you're, throughout the whole thing, he's making citations that you're supposed to go to the back of the book while you're reading it, and then come forward, and there's, like, the one thing I remember is just this long, like, neurotic, like, discussion on marijuana, and I'm sure that some David Foster Wallace, specialist, I keep doing this where I'm like worried that some specialist is listening to me talk about things and go like, that guy's a fucking idiot. But I'm sure that I'm doing an extreme disservice to Wallace by saying that like it's just being neurotic. But like, it just seems like that's kind of what it's just extremely, extremely detailed. And that's kind of one of the things that got me, that was unable for me to get through it was because it was so dense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't entirely remember why I brought it up.
because of the dense writing.
Yes. Yeah. And I have to say, having said what I said about his books, I actually have a book for you guys in my car.
Cool. Really? Very cool.
That is one of his books, but there is one that is really accessible. It's called The Use of the Self, and I have a copy for you. I just forgot to bring it in with me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool. It's short. It's not as dense. It's, you know, a little more... something accessible. I know I already used that word, but
no,
user friendly. Yeah.
I will gladly take books.
Great.
Yeah. As he gestures to our enormous bookshelf.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think that's really interesting. And actually, I guess it kind of like panned out that the text associated with such a movement based discipline is better explained through movement. Like, yeah. I guess if it were like very simply written out, I kind of get the impression that you would kind of lose something. Mm-hmm. You would lose the physicality, and you would lose the... Not that it wouldn't also be taught physically, but if it weren't such a complete necessity to pair the physical training with the accompanied reading,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like it would be kind of lost...
Yeah, it's also a very individual thing. So you can write as much as you want about what a proper alignment is,
mm-hmm.
but everybody's habits are going to be different. So mm-hmm. if your alignment is, you know, to left of center, and he's writing about what center is, somebody who's right of center is not going to have the same experience with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I had another thought, but I don't know where it went.
It's okay. It'll probably come back.
Yeah.
How... And so you take classes, obviously, right?
I'm sure.
How big are the classes?
There are, I think, 7 of us
okay.
in the training course right now, but it's a mixed level course. So we have students who are in their third year, and I'm in my first year, mm-hmm. and we're all in the same room doing the same, generally the same work.
Yeah.
The third year students do a lot more hands-on work, and I get to receive a lot more of it, which is great. Until next year, when I have to a lot more of it.
And so, does it look more like a yoga class or like a book and desk class?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Cool. Because there's actually a lot of for this particular training course, we do a lot of anatomy coursework. So we have books that we read, and we do drawings of bones just to sort of get a better idea of where things are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not necessary to do that to learn this work, but I find it really helpful, and I'm really glad that we do it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm just a big nerd, and I want to know everything about mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah.
So it's great for me actually learning about the bones and the muscles and the connections throughout the body.
I also like the idea of there just being a wall in your apartment of just drawings of bones.
Yeah.
Like, just like, so like, I don't know, someone's coming into that and just being like, oh, like very detailed, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not as immediate of a,
Or like, you know, that trope of like the detective who's obsessed with a case
yeah.
where there's yeah. where there's like pictures of people's like blurry pictures of people with like string attached yeah. to it, except that instead of people's faces, it's like a tibia
yeah.
with like a string attached
like
to
the
a femur.
Connected to
yeah.
The
yeah. Yeah.
You don't know. You haven't seen my room.
Oh. No. On one side is that cold case that you're trying to crack, and then on the other side is a bunch of pictures of bones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Cool. cool. Well, we've got a few minutes left. We always like to try and give a little space for our guests to like plug something. That doesn't obviously if there's not something super upcoming, you can just like shout out like your favorite thing.
Well, I don't really have anything coming up. Shout out my favorite thing. What do you mean?
Yeah, so like last time we had a couple people on Friday.
Yeah.
Was that Friday?
Monday? I don't remember.
A day. It was Josh and Tyler, and Tyler plugged D&D, playing D&D.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, which we've done that occasionally. We do that often.
We do it a lot. Do it twice a week. Do it occasionally. Yeah, that's we do it a lot.
Yeah. And Josh talked about, like, gave a shout out to Thompson Street Opera Company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Cool. I'm going to give a shout out to Slackline.
Cool.
Yeah. It's one of my absolute favorite things. And since this weather this week is supposed to be amazing,
yeah,
I intend to be out there quite a few times.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, slackline. Slackline. Is that...
It's sort of like a tightrope, but there's slack in the line, so it moves when you're on it. And I own one, because I saw someone doing it on the internet, and I thought, I really'd like to do that. And I bought one, and I had no idea what I was doing. But I've had it for a few years now, and I love it. I do it whenever I can.
Cool.
Wow.
And also, I'm always willing to teach people how to do it.
Nice.
Just for fun. So nice. There's that.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, is there a place that people can find you, like Instagram or like Facebook, like where? Like,
Yeah. I post some videos of slackline and
cool
things on my Facebook. Every once in a while, I'll have an epic fall, and I will post those.
Yeah.
They're great. Haven't had one in a while, but look out for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this has been Scoppy Radio. My name is Dan Johansson.
My name is Maureen Smith, and I just want to emphasize, as I do at the end of every episode, how important donations are. We are both poor, and we would like to expand Scoppy as much as possible. We would love to start funding performances. We would love to donate stuff to causes that are important to us. Mm-hmm. And as much as we love, you know, talking about making art and talking to people who do art and how to make art better, like, we'd love to do so much more, and we can't do that without your help. So you can head to scoppymag.com. There's a donate button, and you can do a one-time donation. You can do a monthly thing for like $5 a month, mm-hmm. which is like a cup of coffee every mm-hmm. month that you forego and perhaps just make it home. So yeah.
Yeah.
Help us out. Help yourself out.
Mm-hmm. Keep an eye out. We've got a lot of really cool interviews scheduled. Next week's going to be a huge week for our podcast. We're very excited for. If you, I don't know how you're catching this, but we are on iTunes. If you want to find us under Scoppy Mag, we are there.
If you just search Scoppy Mag, one word.
Yep.
It's just like one word, Scoppy Mag.
Yep.
We're there.
We are on Facebook, Scoppy Magazine. We are on Instagram, which hopefully I'll be updating soon.
Yeah, you keep plugging Instagram, and I'm like, not posting anything. Yeah, sure. No. Check it out.
One day. Great. Well, thank you so much for listening, and go out and make something.
Yep.